Okay, we are now recording. From here forward, anything that's said gets recorded and put on the internet. So no, there's no editing process in this class. Whatever gets said gets put straight on the internet. And the recording actually is here. That's right. All right, folks, let's go. Where were we? It's been a while. Actually, it has. It's been 3 weeks. The last thing we did was we started a discussion about the relationship between Korban Pesach and Bris Milah, because we were in Yehoshua Perek Hey, and the first thing that happens to Bnei Yisrael is they cross over the Yarden and they come to Gilgal, and they have to do two things. They have to circumcise the entire generation, Bris Milah, and then they are ready for Korban Pesach. So we spoke last time, whenever it was, several weeks ago, about the fact that they were not circumcised for 40 years in the desert, or 38 years, and the fact that they also didn't bring a Korban Pesach for those 38 years. And if they didn't bring a Korban Pesach, it wasn't because technically they were uncircumcised, because that would only be the new generation, if they all had a bris when they left Mitzrayim, but that they were conceptually, as a generation, denied Bris Milah by divine decree, meant that that conceptually, as a generation, they were denied Korban Pesach as a generation as well. The concept of being Nitulei Brit, that the Brit with them essentially had been put on hold. The whole notion of the Brit that was established at Sinai was put on hold. It's going to wait a generation. That generation is going to walk through the desert. They're not allowed to do Bris Milah. They're not allowed to do Korban Pesach. They're not allowed to engage in those components that represent the Brit between God and Israel. Denied them. Chayta Meraglim, Chayta Ego, combination, double whammy, they're out. We're going to wait a whole new generation and then bring the next generation into not only Eretz Yisrael, but also into the Brit that we engaged in at Sinai, the Brit that combined both Korban Pesach and Brit Milah. It's an interesting observation that I don't know if we talked about a ger, but there's an interesting halacha about a ger. So the halacha of a ger, you have the source pages? You have the source pages? Okay, if you, anybody not have a source page? Right. Anybody else? We have extras. Same ones. Same. We're going to be on it for at least another week. At least. So if you look at the bottom of page, on source number 6, there's a whole series of midrashic sources that link Korban Pesach and Bris Milah. Right? There's a whole series of midrashim that link Korban Pesach to Bris Milah. The nexus between these two mitzvot is a fascinating study, and that's essentially what I want to do for this week and next week, is look at that nexus. Because on the one hand, it starts in Mitzrayim, Kol Arel Lo Yochal Bo, anybody who's uncircumcised can't partake of the Korban Pesach. We have no other example of one mitzvah that becomes a prerequisite for another. It doesn't say if you don't have a Bris Milah, you can't keep Shabbos. There's nothing that says if you don't have a Bris Milah, you can't keep kosher. Or if you don't keep kosher, you can't keep Shabbos. Or if you don't keep Shabbos, there's no halachically in the text of the Chumash, we have no other example of one mitzvah that becomes a prerequisite. If you don't do this mitzvah, you can't do that mitzvah. With the exception of Korban Pesach and Bris Milah, one becomes a prerequisite to the other. And that's part of this nexus of these two mitzvot. And much has been said about the fact that they're the only two positive mitzvot for which there's an onesh karet attributed to them. Karet is always for a negative precept. There's whatever list of mitzvot for which the violation is karet. Karet is like the worst possible onesh the Torah can give. They're always negative mitzvot, always lo tasa. You have to do an action to violate something to receive karet. The only two exceptions are the willful non-observance of Bris Milah and the willful non-observance of Korban Pesach. Those are the only two positive mitzvot for which the absence of action also carries with it an onish karet. There's a whole series of points of connection between these two mitzvot. There are midrashei chazal as well that link the two, not only historically in the context of Yeshua Parakei, right, had to do Bris Mila and then they could do Korban Pesach. In Mitzrayim, we'll talk about that. There's no point in the text in Yetziat Mitzrayim where it says that they did Bris Mila, but the Medrash claims that the reason why they had to take the animal on the 10th of the month and set it aside is because they needed that time to do Bris Mila. Because they hadn't, through the as slaves, they weren't circumcised. So, and that's a Midrashic source. It's not in the text, but again, it fits in the broad context of all of the points of connection between these two mitzvot. One of the interesting pieces of it is the fact that for a ger, there's a series of steps that are required for gerus, essentially to come into the brit, right, later post Sinai. How does one come into the brit of Bnei Yisrael? So we know that there's a requirement of Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim. A person has to accept upon themselves the mitzvot. They have to accept upon themselves the mitzvot of Sinai. And they have to go to the mikvah. And there's a whole series of steps that are learned by the, most of them derived from the experience at Sinai. That's really a Shavuos talk. But there's a Hit Kadishtem Hayom U'Machar was a process of purification at High Sinai. So they all had to go to the mikveh and they had to in the ancient world any bathhouse was a mikveh because they were all in the ground. In biblical terms that was always a mikveh. But there was also sprinkling of water, and there was sprinkling of dambrit. There's a korban mila. There's a korban gear, there's a special korban you had to bring for gerus. Gemara increases all of the requirements for Gerus from essentially two sources. One is Rus and the other is Matan Torah. And for a man, the requirement is also Bris Mila. That's not derived necessarily from High Sinai, but it's derived from the whole context of Yetziat Mitzrayim and what we're describing. There was an obligation for a male to be circumcised. The Gemara has an interesting suggestion which it rejects. And it rejects on the basis of a pasuk. Rashi quotes it in source number 6. You have Rashi's quotation in Bamidbar Perek Tet, in Baal Oscho, by Pesach Sheni, which I showed you last class. V'chi agur itchem ger v'yasa Pesach la'Hashem, yachol kol hamitgayer yaseh Pesach miyad. I might have thought that in addition to all the other requirements, one of the requirements would be that a ger should have to bring a korban pesach immediately upon his conversion. Talmud lamar chuka achat. Therefore, the Torah says there has to be one law for the ger and for the citizen. Kach mashmao v'chi yagur itcham ger uva'et la'asot pesach im chaverav kechuka u'kumishpat yaseh. If you have a ger, then he'll do the korban pesach together with everybody else. In other words, the Gemara has a hapamina, has a possible notion that a ger should have to be a part of the conversion process, should have to be a korban pesach, no matter what time he or she converts. To which the Gemara rejects and says, no, the Torah establishes that korban pesach has to be brought nationally, communally with everybody else. You can't have an individual bring a korban pesach sometime during the year. It has to be on Pesach. But that's a technical answer to a philosophical underpinning, namely, that there's some connection between Korban Pesach and Gir. Gemara doesn't have a suggestion that a Ger should have to bring a Korban Ola or a Korban Shlamim, or that a Ger should have to daven 16 years worth of tefillot. There's no notion that a Ger has to make up every mitzvah immediately upon Gerus. There's a process of conversion that reflects the notion of entering into the Brit. Kabbalat Malchut Shemayim, the purification process of the mikveh, a korban for a recognition of Gerus, specifically, and Mila. Why suddenly should there be a havamina of a korban pesach? Unless somehow the korban pesach is linked to this broad identification of the brit between God and Israel. And when you enter that brit, you do so through, as Bnei Yisrael did in Mitzrayim, you do so through the Korban Pesach. So the Havamina is that a Ger should have to go through that same process, to which the Torah says the Ger does go through that same process, but he or she has to wait till Pesach time because you can't do it as an individual. That piece of it can only be done nationally, communally. Whereas Bris Milah is individual. But the Korban Pesach, you can't bring the Korban Pesach on your own. It has to be Kichuka Achat. The Torah says it has to be chuka achat leger v'lazrach agar b'tochachem. It has to be one law for the ger and for the azrach, one communal commemoration. So all of these connections point to the Korban Pesach as a unique component of the breach between God and Israel, not just a specific mitzvah related to Pesach, but a much more global mitzvah related to the entire breach between God and Israel. That's essentially the thesis. Whereas any other mitzvah, for example, look at all the other mitzvot of Pesach. 7 days eat matzah. 7 days eat matzah is a halacha that's specific to Pesach, or Chag HaMatzot. It has no ramification, no implication beyond the confines of the 7 days of Pesach. Any other mitzvah, Shabbos, whatever it is. It's specific to the confines of the parameters of that mitzvah. Whereas what it seems to be, what the indications seem to be are that Pesach and Milah, the Korban Pesach and Milah, have an implication beyond just to the confines of the mitzvah itself, but they relate to some component of the broad brit between God and Israel. And that's why when they enter into Eretz Yisrael and they're essentially engaging in that brit again, as they did at Sinai, as they did through Yetziat Mitzrayim, a new generation, that process includes Bris Milah and Korban Pesach. That's the thesis.
So if you're a geir, you're not completed until you give this Korban Pesach?
Well, there's a whole discussion in theoretically the answer is yes. Practically, there are certain components of the process that are halachically prerequisites, and there are certain components of the process that are required but aren't considered prerequisites. What do I mean by that? Everybody agrees that there's a korban that a ger has to bring. We have no Beit HaMikdash. So can we have gerim without a korban? So the answer is that there are certain components of the process that are prerequisites. Kabbalat Malchut Shamayim is a prerequisite, mikveh is a prerequisite, Milah is a prerequisite. Those components which are dependent upon the Beit HaMikdash are only prerequisites when we have a Beit HaMikdash, much as all of the korbanot are only required when we have the Beit HaMikdash. So korban-related components of the gear process, once the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, are put on hold. It's actually a Gemara that says that every gear will have to bring that korban when the Beit HaMikdash has been rebuilt. According to Rav Kook, it will be a vegetarian korban. According to everybody else, it will be meat, but it won't come from Rav Ashkenaz. No. It's a dat yachid of Rav Kook, and it's even the Rambam for sure not. The Rambam explicitly says to the contrary. It's only Rav Kook, and even Rav Kook doesn't say it explicitly. He alludes to it.
No, I'm saying you must have
that. Remember to edit that phrase. That's a whole different discussion. You're not in America. That's a fascinating discussion, but it's beyond the scope of this conversation. I can tell you the source for it. The source in Rav Kook doesn't say it explicitly. He implies it in his commentary on the Siddur, in Olat Re'iyah, the very end of Shemoneh Esrei. In the last paragraph of the Shemoneh Esrei, the pasuk says, "Va'avala Hashem enchat Yushlaim kimei olam uchshanim kadmoniot." So on that Yehi Ratzon, Rav Kook writes that piece. That Korban Mincha will be the standard of all korbanot.
Why did Rav Kook come to this conclusion? That's what I'm saying. He couldn't have just. He must have had some way to go.
Okay. I will write it down for a topic to come back to, but right now it's. Okay. So what I wanted to do is go through the history of Korban Pesach and Tanakh as a whole, as an expression of this thesis. It's one of those. It's an interesting exercise. Korban Pesach appears in the context of Yetziat Mitzrayim. It appears here at the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua. Where else in Tanakh do we find the Korban Pesach as a reference, and what does it signify? In other words, we're going to take this thesis that the Korban Pesach is more than just a korban related to the Chag, but a much broader representation of the bridge between God and Israel, and trace it as it goes through historically, as it goes through Tanakh. We've seen essentially three places so far where we find the Korban Pesach mentioned: Yetziat Mitzrayim, Pesach Sheni in the second year of Yetziat Mitzrayim after they leave Egypt, and Yehoshua. There are three other places in Tanakh where the Korban Pesach is mentioned, where it talks about Bnei Yisrael bringing the Korban Pesach. And I want to show you them because it fits into this thesis very well, and I think it's important to see it in that context. Take a look, for example. You have all the sources here on your source page. Where it talks about Bnei Yisrael bringing the Korban Pesach, there are six references to this in Tanakh. You have it Pesach Mitzrayim, Pesach in the second year, Pesach Yehoshua in Gilgal, and the other three I'll show you. Let's start with Divrei Hayamim. We're not going to go through all of the prakim here because it will take us too much time. What's the problem?
I say every week I realize how much I don't know.
That's what we learn. All our lives we continue to learn. Perek Lamed. Divrei Hayamim Bet Perek Lamed. Two stories in Tanakh in which we find, we're going to do a time warp. Time jump to the second half of Bayit Risha. The latter half of the period of Tanakh, the latter half of the period of the kings in the First Temple period, the end of last 150, 200 years of Tanakh, is a series of ups and downs between kings, and we're talking specifically about Malchut Yehuda. Malchut Yisrael is a whole different story, but in Malchut Yehuda, which is loyal to the Beit HaMikdash and loyal to the House of David, you have kings that go up and down in terms of their link to or identification with the bridge with God versus their loyalty to the idolatrous cultures surrounding them. So they'll yo-yo. They'll flip-flop. One king will be idolatrous, the next king will be loyal. The next king will be idolatrous, the next king will be loyal. It goes back and forth. And from time to time, you have a king who, in an attempt to sort of rid the country of the idolatry, goes through a national reformation and a national cleansing of the people of their idolatrous history. And you have two such instances specifically. One is Chizkiyahu, and the other is Yoshiyahu. Perek Lamed is Chizkiyahu. We'll start from the beginning of the perek. I'll show you a couple of psukim. Vayishlach Chizkiyahu al kol Yisrael v'Yehuda. V'gam igrot katav al Ephraim u'Menashe. This is part of his reformation. In other words, he goes through the whole country. It's described more in Perek Chavtet, his process of cleansing the country from the idolatry. Rebuilds the temple, regenerates the temple, he cleanses it, takes out all the Avodah Zarah. Chizkiyahu comes in the immediate aftermath of a king by the name of Ahaz, who was an idolatrous king. Um, Let's start from Perek Chav Tet. I'll do a couple of psukim in Perek Chav Tet, and then we'll jump to Perek Lamed. Starting at the beginning of Perek Chav Tet, Chizkiyahu Malach ben 25 shana ve'esumvatesh shana Malach b'Yishalayim. Chizkiyahu reigned for 29 years. Shem imo avia batzchayahu. One of the few places where it tells us the name of his mother. Whole story to that. Vayas hayashar b'nei Hashem. V'chol asher asad David aviv. Chizkiyahu was loyal to God. Did exactly. Do you have a Tanakh?
I don't. Help yourself.
Right, loyal to God and loyal to the house of David. B'shana rishana l'malcho. B'chodesh harishon. Patach et daltot bet Hashem b'yichazkem. In the first year of his reign, he opened up the doors of the temple and he strengthened them. Meaning, Ahaz, his predecessor, had closed the temple. In an idolatrous culture, the temple was a stumbling block, or it was a challenge to an identification with the local Avodah Zarah, because the temple was essentially an anti-Avodah Zarah institution. So Ahaz, in his embrace of Avodah Zarah, closed the temple doors. Chizkiyahu reopens them. He brings the Kohanim and the Levim together. Sanctify the temple, dedicate the temple, purify the temple. Because our forefathers have sinned in the eyes of God, they've abandoned the temple. They've turned their backs on the temple of God. Gam sagud la tot haolam, vayichabu atanerot, they extinguished the lights of the menorah, ktoret lo ektiru, they didn't bring ktoret, ola le'alu b'kodesh, l'loke Yisrael, they never brought korbanot in the Beit HaMikdash, v'yiketzav Hashem al Yudah v'Yishalayim, and God was angry at Israel. The rest of the process is the description of the extent of the purification of Israel from the idolatry. And then after the entire chapter, lengthy description of the extent of their removal, the purge of idolatry from the temple and from the land, Perek Lamed begins. Vayishlach Chizkiyahu al kol Yisrael b'Yehuda v'gam migvot katav al Ephraim u'Menashe. Chizkiyahu sends letters to all of Yehuda, and he includes Ephraim and Menashe, which is part of the northern kingdom, in this letter. La'asot Pesach la'Hashem Elokei Yisrael, to come and bring Korban Pesach in the temple. Vayivetz HaMelech v'Sav v'Chol HaKab Yishlam la'asot Pesach b'Chodesh HaShni. The only problem he has is that it's already Iyar. He's got a technical problem, right? He wants to bring the Korban Pesach, but it is now Iyar. So he takes counsel with all of the elders in Yerushalayim. They couldn't bring the Korban Pesach the first time around, because at that time, because at that time the temple was still closed. So it was good in their eyes. They decided that they were going to celebrate Pesach Sheni instead of Pesach Rishon. And it was good in the rise, and so they sent a letter from north to south to bring a Pesach l'Hashem, because for all these years they weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing.
So were they not doing any?
Oh, so I'm going to get to that issue in a second. As he sends a letter, Shuvu el Pasuk Vav, Vayelchu haratzim b'igot miyad ha-melech, they send these letters out from the king. V'sarav b'chol Yisrael v'Yehuda u'kemitzvat ha-melech l'mor. They send these letters to all of Yehuda, and it's interesting, they always include Israel in all of this, right? There's even though there's a separate kingdom. But it's, and from this point of view, it's already somewhat united. Shuvu el Hashem Elokei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yisrael. Return. Enough already with the idolatry. V'yashov el ha-pleita ha-nisharet lachem mikaf malchei Ashur. With the remnant of you that's left from the heels of the king of Ashur, come back. Don't be like your forefathers who rebelled against God. And God left them to be desolate. Don't be stubborn like your forefathers. Stubbornness is not a Jewish trait. Tnu yad la Hashem uvo le mikdasho asher ekdish le'olam. Come, support, come to the temple. Ivdu et Hashem elokechem yashuv mikem charon apo. Come, serve God, and God will relinquish his anger from you. Ki b'shuvachem el Hashem elokechem uvneichem l'rachamim lifnei shuvahem v'lashuv le'eretz hazot. When you return, then God will have mercy upon you. Ki chanum v'rachum Hashem elokechem. God is merciful and he is compassionate and he won't abandon you. They go out. The runners go all the way up north to Zvulun, which is in Emek Yisrael. And the locals laughed at them. What are you? You got to be kidding. Ach anashim mi'asher u'minasher u'mizvulun nichnu'u v'yavoyu li'yushalayim. There were a few from all the various tribes, Masher, Minasher, and Zvulun. There were a few that agreed and came to Yushalayim. Gam b'yudah hayta yad ha'elokim latet lehem lev echad la'asot mitzvat ha'melech v'hasarim b'dvar Hashem. In Yudah they agreed. There was a great commitment. V'yesvu Yushalayim am rav la'asot et chag ha'matzot b'chodesh ha'sheni. They gathered together a great multitude to celebrate Chag HaMatzot in the second month. The Gemara has an interesting discussion of this. The Gemara says it's not just the Korban Pesach they were celebrating, it's the entire seven-day holiday of Chag HaMatzot, which is not part of the parameters of Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni is only Korban Pesach. They were celebrating Chag HaMatzot B'Chodesh HaSheni. The Gemara says what Chizkiyahu consulted with the elders was not whether to celebrate Pesach Sheni. You don't need a consultation with the sages to celebrate Pesach Sheni. What you needed to as a consultation with the sages was to make the year a leap year in the month of Iyar, and to transform Iyar back into Nisan. Normally, you can only do a leap year by adding a month to Chodesh Adar. It's Gzirat HaKetuv, only Chodesh Adar can be doubled up. The Gemara says, Chizkiyahu iber shana b'chodesh Nisan. He took Nisan and he made it into Nisan Aleph, took Iyar, turned it into Nisan Bet, and he had Korban Pesach and Nisan Bet, the same way we have Purim and Adar Bet. Which is partially why in the north they laughed at him. Because you're a month late. But this was so significant, so powerful, so important, that it warranted making Iyar into Nisan again. They gathered all the people together. They destroyed all the false altars, all the bamot in Yerushalayim. They took all of the sacrifices to the idols and they sent them down to Nachal Kidron. And they brought the Korban Pesach on the 14th of the second month, which is the month of Nisan. Bet. And the Leviim brought special olot, and there's a whole dedication of the temple that went together with this Korban Pesach, the reestablishment of the ma'amad of the Kohanim and the Leviim, the sprinkling of the dam, zorkim et adam miyad the Leviim, ki rabat bakahal asher lo yitkadashu v'alevim al shechitat pesachim lechol lo tahor lakdish l'Hashem. There were many who were impure. They had to sprinkle them with the purification waters and to make them tahor. The rest of the story I'm going to skip for now. Skip down to Pasuk Chav Aleph. V'yasu b'nei Yisrael ha'nimtzim b'Yushalayim et Chag HaMatzot shiv'at yamim b'simcha gdola. They celebrated Chag HaMatzot for 7 days. So I said that it wasn't just Korban Pesach, it was actually an entire establishment of the leap year. That's Pesach Hizkiyahu. So not only does he have to bring a Korban Pesach as part of this process, it was so important to him that he was prepared to change the calendar. We're talking about a process of taking a generation that had been engaged in idolatry and bringing them back to the loyalty to Israel, right? That's Pesach Hizkiyahu. skip a couple of. What, Korban Pesach? Right, but there's only there's two stories in Tanakh with the process, three actually, where the process is essentially orchestrated from the king at a fundamental level, at a national grassroots down to the last idol level. They are Shmuel. After the hundreds of years of Sefer Shoftim, we'll come to that. Bezat Hashem, we'll learn Sefer Shoftim in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. That's essentially one of Shmuel's contributions to the cause, was that Sefer Shoftim is this constant up and down of idolatry. But the up and down of idolatry, instead of looking like this, right, looks like this. Because every time they go through the iteration, they get worse and worse and worse and worse. They never quite recover. Right? There's always idolatry. The idolatry is growing, so a little bit they recover, and then they get back. There's this constant, right, that until Shmuel. And Shmuel carries out a comprehensive eradication of idolatry from the land completely. Remember that in Sefer Shoftim, the idolatry is essentially the idolatry of Baal. Baal is the local indigenous Canaanite pagan idolatry. All the other idolatries that we hear about are all, we talked about this a little bit in Sefer, the beginning of Sefer Yeshua, every nation has their own idolatrous culture. Baal was indigenous to the land of Canaan. Baal was particularly immoral, particularly offensive. But every nation essentially had their own god. So if you got too close to Ammon and Moab, you got influenced socially and culturally by the local power, by their cultural influence. If you got too close to Tzor and Sidon, you got a little bit influenced by their cultural center. But Baal was the local indigenous population. Baal was a thorn in our side for 400 years of Sefer Shoftim. Every time they go through this iteration, it's always back to Baal and Ashtoreth. Shmuel eradicates Baal from the land of Israel. Shmuel essentially creates, for the first time since we enter the land, an idolatry-free zone in Eretz Yisrael. Baal doesn't come back until Ahab and Izebel. And it doesn't come back until Ahab marries Izebel, who is the daughter of the king of Sidon, who is a man by the name of Et Baal and who worships Baal, and she brings Baal back into the land of Israel. So Shmuel's campaign is not just an iteration amongst many of this flip-flop, but it's much more comprehensive. That kind of comprehensive, from top to bottom eradication of idolatry essentially happens three or four times in Tanakh. Shmuel, Chizkiyahu, Yoshiyahu, the finding of the Sefer Torah, we read it as a Haftorah at some point in the year, and when they return from Bavel under Ezra. Those are essentially the.
Do we know there were other attempts that weren't?
Yeah, there were always kings who were flip flop. One generation was loyal to idolatry, the other generation was loyal to God. But there was this, from what we have described in Tanakh, we never find the kind of a comprehensive campaign, north, south, east, west, throughout the country, to remove, not only to change loyalties or allegiances, but to literally go from temple to temple, destroy the altars, destroy the idolatries, destroy the bamot, and wage a campaign, much like Moshe Rabbeinu after Chayta Ego, Mila Hashem Elai, right? Take your swords and go and kill all the idolaters. Right? That kind of comprehensive campaign, we find a handful of times in Tanakh. Different than just the one generation is loyal to God and the next generation is not.
So does that give them the right to add?
The Gemara is actually critical of Chizkiyahu for it. That's not my issue right now. My issue isn't so much whether he was right or wrong in being ma'aber shana of making it a leap year. That the Gemara addresses, and the Gemara actually says that he made a mistake. My issue was more to see that whatever his campaign is connected somehow to the Korban Pesach. He can't relinquish the role of the Korban Pesach in that process. Can't let it go. Okay, we're in the month of Iyar, so we'll wait 11 months till we bring the Korban Pesach. It's too important to him symbolically. And that's essentially the link that we're looking at. Take a look in Perek Lamed Hei. Perek Lamed Hei is an additional story. It actually starts in Perek Lamed Daled. Story of Yoshiyahu. Now, Yoshiyahu comes after Menashe. You've all heard of Menashe, right? Menashe is an interesting king in Israel. Story of Menashe is Menashe, probably of all the kings of Israel, Menashe probably has the greatest track record for evil.
Why did anybody name their kid Menashe?
Well, because Ephraim Menashe is different from Menashe, king of Israel. Right, you name him after Ephraim and Menashe, not after Menashe, king of Israel. Menashe is attributed, has three claims to fame. Number one, he reintroduces the idolatry. Not only does he reintroduce the idolatry of Baal, he reintroduces the idolatry of Molech. Molech is a particularly nasty idolatry, child sacrifice, fires of Molech, etc. He opens up what's called the Tophet in Geben Inom, which was the temple of Molech in the valley just beneath Yerushalayim. So that's where the word Gehenem comes from. It comes from Geben Inom, which is the valley of Ben Hinnom, which is where the idolatry of Molech stood. The term Gehenem is borrowed from that notion that, you know, Geben Inom was essentially a place of the fires of Molech. You understand the metaphor. Menashe closes the doors to the temple, opens up this temple down below in the valley to Molech, closes the doors of the temple, and Menashe is also attributed with the murder or the execution of all the Nevi'im. Anybody who was a Navi Lashem was executed. That way he had no competition. It's a simple way to avoid competition. Menashe's reign lasts for almost 70 years, which means that it's a full generation. So in the time, by the time Menashe is finished, you have an entire generation of Bnei Israel, generation and a half, that have grown up with A, the temple closed, B, Molech operating in the valley of Geben Inom, and C, none of the Nevi'im are around. The Nevi'im essentially have been either wiped out or forced underground. Menashe's reign ends when Yoshiyahu comes to the throne. Ben Shmona Shanim Yoshiyahu b'malcho. I'm starting with Perek Lamed Daled. Ben Shmona Shanim Yoshiyahu b'malcho. Yoshiyahu is 8 years old when he takes the throne. Menashe is killed. Yoshiyahu comes to the throne. U'shloshim v'achat shana malach b'Yerushalayim. He reigns for 31 years. V'yasa yashar b'nei Hashem v'yelech b'darchei David aviv u'losaya min esmol. And Yoshiyahu is a good king. Ubishmone shanim lemalcho v'odenu na'ar hechel yidrosh l'lokei David aviv. He starts to seek out God at the age of 8. Ubishtemesu shana hechel l'teheret Yudah v'Yerushalayim min abamot v'hashirim v'hapsilim v'hamasechot. And in the 12th year, there's all discussion about the years, the chronologies, various discrepancies of the chronology, but in the 12th year, he starts to purify Yehuda and Yerushalayim from all of the altars and idols that are there. Okay. I'm going to skip a few psukim. Part of the process is the cleansing or the cleaning up of the temple. Remember, the temple had been closed for 70 years. So the building that's closed for 70 years, just by the course of events, ends up looking like a condemned building. So he's got a job and a half to go into the temple and clean it up from start to finish, stem to stern. Almost rebuilds the temple. And in so doing, they find Pasuk Yudalad. This is a very famous story. The version of the story in Sefer Melachim we read as a Haftorah. Ubehotziyam et kesef hamuvah bet Hashem. When they found, as they were removing the silver in the temple, matzach Hilkiyahu haKohen et Sefer Torah Hashem biyad Moshe. They find a Sefer Torah. Vayan Hilkiyahu v'yomer lo shefanu sefer Sefer Torah matzati v'vet Hashem. They said, well, they're celebrating, they found the Sefer Torah. You understand what it means if they found the Sefer Torah and it's already a Chiddush? Because Menashe had closed everything up. Vayten Chilkiyahu at the Sefer al-Shafan, v'yavei Shafan at the Sefer al-Melech, v'yashev od et ha-melech tavale mor, kol ha-shenitam bi'arabedach ha-emosim. They bring the Sefer Torah to the king. The king opens up the Sefer Torah and he reads it. In Sefer Malachim, there's a description. Yeah, they were, found the Sefer Torah. People could read a Sefer Torah. They knew what it says. But they hadn't had a Sefer
Torah.
That's not clear. It certainly wasn't all Chamshachim Sefer Torah, because even during the time of Chazal, all five books were in five separate scrolls. There was never they don't combine the five books of Chumash into one scroll until probably the time of Gaon, I think. But certainly not in time of Tanakh. Oh, so we know which one it was. We know it was Sefer Dvarim. Mm-hmm. How do we know? Because we know what he reads. They don't know what to do. The story in Sefer Malachim is a little clearer, a little easier to understand, but essentially they open up the Sefer Torah and they read a section, and Yoshiah was so shocked, so traumatized by what he reads, that he goes running to the Navi. Who's the Navi? The Navi is a person by the name of Chuldah HaNeviyah. That's the story of Chuldah HaNeviyah. The Gemara has a question: why did he run to Yirmiyahu? Why did he run to Chuldah? Why didn't he go to Yirmiyahu? Yirmiyahu was the same period of time. What happened to Yirmiyahu? The Gemara says Yirmiyahu was on a mission at that point in time. Yirmiyahu was on a mission to return the 10 lost tribes that had gone into exile under Ashur. So Yirmiyahu wasn't there. So he went to the assistant. Right, the assistant was Chuldah HaNeviyah. He comes to Chuldah. Pasuk of Bet, Vayelech Chilkiyahu v'asher ha-melech el Chuldah ha-neviyah eshet shalom ben Tokhat ben Chasra shomei ha-begadim v'yoshevet b'yushalayim b'mishneh. He goes running to Chuldah, and you have her whole yichus there. Vayedabru aleha kazot, they told her that v'tom aleihem kom ha-asher malkei Yisrael imru le'isha sheshalachat chemilai, and she responds and says as follows: kom ha-asher hinini mevi ra'al ha-makom ha-zev al yoshvav et kol ha'alot ha'ktuvim al ha-sefer asher karu lifnei melech Yehuda. I will, says God, I will bring upon Israel all of the calamities that you have read in this sefer that you have found. Evidently what happened was, and this is essentially what the Mefarshim says, they found the Sefer Torah rolled to a particular parsha. They opened it up and they read. What parsha did they read? Ki Tavo, the Tochacha. They were so traumatized by what they read, they ran to the Chuldah to find out what it meant, and the Chuldah says, this is the direction that Israel is headed. So the result was that Yoshiyahu redoubles his efforts, and he goes to cleanse all of Israel from the Pasuk of Tet. V'yishlach ha-melech v'yasof et kol ziknei Yehudah v'yishlam v'yal ha-melech beit Hashem et kol ish Yehudah v'yishvei Yerushalayim v'kohanim v'alevi'im v'chol ha'am migadol v'yad katan v'yikra b'oznehem et divrei sefer ha-brit nimitza beit Hashem. Yoshiyahu goes and he gathers all the people together in the temple and he reads them this portion of the Sefer Torah. V'yamod ha-melech alamdo v'yichrot et ha-brit lifnei Hashem l'alechat acharei Hashem v'lishmor et mitzvotav v'edotav v'chukav b'chol levavo b'chol nafsho. So he brings them all into a brit. He says to them, it's not just enough to open the doors of the temple and to cleanse the temple. All the people in the whole countryside, they have to renew the brit, and they do. V'yichrot et ha-brit. They renew the brit with God. La'asot et divrei ha-brit ha-ktuvim al ha-sefer hazeh, to abide by the laws of the brit that are written in this sefer. V'yamed et kol ha-nimtza b'yushalayim u'v'nyamin v'yasu yoshvei Yerushalayim ke-brit elokim elokei avotahem. All of Israel connected, united in a reenactment of this brit. V'yasu Yoshiyahu et kol toivot mikol ha-toivot mikol ha-aratzot asher livnei Yisrael. Yoshiyahu removes the idolatry from all of the lands that belong to Israel, meaning not just the temple. This is a national campaign. V'yaved et kol ha-nimtza b'Yisrael l'avot et Hashem elokehem, brings all of Israel into their loyalty to God. Kol yamav losarum me'achrei Hashem elokei avotahem, all of his life they are loyal. Perek lamed hey. Vayas Yoshiyahu Yerushalayim Pesach Lasha. Culminates with the the Korban Pesach. Vayishchatu haPesach b'arba'asah l'chodesh harishon, on the 14th of the first month they shechtu the Pesach. Ve'emet haKohanim haMishmarot l'yechazkim l'avodat bet Hashem, and they strengthen the Kohanim in their role in the Beit HaMikdash. Etc., etc. Skip to Pasuk Yud Zion. Ve'ya'asu b'nei Yisrael hanimtzeim et haPesach be'etahi. All of Israel in the Beit HaMikdash at that point in time brought the Korban Pesach. Perek Lamed Hei Pasuk Yud Zion. Ve'et Chag HaMatzot Shivat Yamim. Pesach on Erev Pesach on the 14th, and then Chag HaMatzot 7 days. Now listen to this. V'lo na'asa Pesach kamohu b'Yisrael mimei Shmuel Hanavi v'chol machai Yisrael la'asu k'Pesach asher asa Yoshiyahu. Such a Pesach has not been done since the days of Shmuel Hanavi. In all the days of the king, no Pesach like this was done until like the one that Yoshiyahu did. V'konim v'alim v'chol Yehuda b'Yisrael l'nimtza v'yoshua Yerushalayim. So the Mefarshim raised the obvious question. Right. We just read about Pesach Chizkiyahu. We just saw that, correct? So take a look at the Radak. Radak raises exactly that question. Oh, so that's exactly what the Radak says. Source 7. The fact that the Pasuk says that there was no Pesach like this, shall you call Yisrael, what does it mean? It means, shall you call Yisrael b'lev echad l'avodat Hashem. It means with the sense of unity of all of Israel together, to loyal to God. Because remember that what Chizkiyahu wanted to do, Chizkiyahu wanted to bring into his Korban Pesach not only the people of Yehuda and Yerushalayim, but also all the people of the north. And what did they do? They laughed at him. Whereas Yoshiyahu, there's a whole discussion about the role of Yoshiyahu, the role of this, the Aseret HaShvatim at this point in Jewish history, but the Gemara says, I told you, the Gemara says that Yirmiyahu went to bring back the Aseret HaShvatim. It's machloket in the Gemara whether or not the 10 tribes returned. The Gemara seems to conclude that Yirmiyahu brings back the Aseret HaShvatim and Yoshiyahu reigned over them. Yirmiyahu hechziran v'Yoshiyahu malach aleihem. Which means, or at least a portion of them, representation of all the Shvatim. Which means that what you have here is much more comprehensive than what you had in Chizkiyahu because it includes the totality of Bnei Yisrael. Says the Radak, like the chein amar b'Shmuel, and that's exactly what it says by Shmuel. Vayinau kol beit Yisrael acharei Hashem, that all of Israel came and followed God. V'yamar v'yasidu Bnei Yisrael atabalim v'tashtavot v'yavdu et Hashem levado. All of the people of Israel, they were loyal to God, and they followed Shmuel's lead. V'gam Pesach she'asach Chizkiyahu rabim Yisrael shelo ayu sham. There were many who weren't there. The Aseret HaShvatim had gone into exile. There was a whole section of Israel that weren't there. V'lo'od ela she'yu mal'ivim b'ratzim. They made fun of the ratzim. They she'yu sholeach Chizkiyahu. So clearly, this was more comprehensive even than Pesach Chizkiyahu. It's also true that here there's a whole discussion of a Brit, which didn't appear in the context of Chizkiyahu. But certainly there is this notion of the totality of Bnei Israel and the reenactment of the Brit connected to the Korban Pesach. The last example is in Sefer Ezra. So we're moving forward in time. We started with Yehoshua. We mentioned briefly Shmuel. Then we did Chizkiyahu, Yoshiyahu. Yeshiyahu is essentially 30 years before the Korban. And then Ezra is the beginning of the return from Bavo.
Did the people really do tshuva from doing idolatry in the days of Yeshiyahu? Did they stop?
From Yeshiyahu? Yeshiyahu is pretty comprehensive. Yeshiyahu is pretty comprehensive.
The people still had them in their doors?
Right, so there's a whole discussion about that. And I believe it's because it's one of the two. It's either the description of Chizkiyahu or of Yoshiyahu. I don't remember either. But we'll discuss that another time. Certainly from the point of view of the Pshat of the Psukim, Yoshiyahu's Biur of Adazara was as comprehensive as you can get.
So he's the worst?
Yeah,
he was the best.
Ezra, Perek Vav. Ezra Perek Vav. Again, there's a renewal of the Jews come back from Eretz, from Bava, they come back to Eretz Yisrael. Whole process of removing the idolatry, the non-Jewish wives, the Gentile wives that they were married to, the removing of the Avodah Zarah. And then Pasuk Yotet, Ve'asu b'nei ha'golah et ha'pesach be'abasa l'chodesh ha'rishon. They do bring the Korban Pesach on the 14th of the first month. Ki hitaharu ha'kohanim ve'alavim ki echad kulam tovim. Because they had finally purified the Kohanim and the Levim from all of the impurities, both marriage and idolatry. Vayishchatu ha'pesach l'chol b'nei ha'golah v'lachahem ha'kohanim v'lahem. So all of these examples together essentially point to the same theme. What's the reason? How can the Navi say that in the time of Yoshiyahu they brought a Korban Pesach? They hadn't brought a Korban Pesach like this since the days of Shmuel and Navi. But they never celebrated Pesach for all those years between Shmuel and Navi and Yoshiyahu? Chizkiyahu being the exception? The answer is no. Every year they had a Korban Pesach. But lo asah kamohu. But this was different. Why was this different? Because every year they could bring a Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach represents a historical moment in our history when in Bnei Yisrael, in their engagement with Mitzrayim, or disengagement from Mitzrayim, abandon the idolatry of Mitzrayim and embrace a loyalty to God. That's essentially what the Korban Pesach represented in Mitzrayim. If you take a look, for example, in source number 8. We jumped around too much today? I've charted it out for you. Pesach Mitzrayim, second year, Yeshua, Chizkiyahu, Yoshiyahu, and Ezra, 6. Add Shmuel, which is a cross-reference, and yet 7. Okay. Those are the points in time from beginning of Tanakh history until the end of all the times that they bring a Korban Pesach. Okay. Now I've got to understand what that means. So I go back to the source. Let's go back to Pesach Mitzrayim. In the context of Pesach Mitzrayim, the Medrash says the following. You find that Israel, when they were in Egypt, were worshipping idols. How we know that Israel was worshipping idols in Egypt is an interesting issue. I won't have time to do it today, but remind me, B'ezrat Hashem, we will explore that. I want to show you the psukim from which we derive the proof that Israel was worshipping idols in Mitzrayim. Shenemar, as it says in Yechezkel Perek Chaf, that's the key perek, Ish et shikutzei enehem lo ishlichu, that the Navi came to them in Mitzrayim and said, get rid of the idolatry. And the people refused. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, Kol zman sheYisrael ovdin l'lohei Mitzrayim lo yigalu. As long as Israel are going to be worshipping the gods of Egypt, they're not leaving Egypt. Lech ve'emo alehen, shi'anichu ma'asein hara'im v'lichbor ba'avodat kochavim. Go and tell them that they have to abandon the covenant, they have to abandon their idolatry. Hareyu d'chdiv, that's what the Pasuk says, in Mitzrayim, mishchu ukchu lechem. On the 10th of the month, draw and take. What does it mean, draw and take? Mishchu ukchu lechem. Klamar, mishchu yedechem me'avadat kochavim. Withdraw your hands from the idolatry. And then, ukchu lechem, so, take the sheep. Go and slaughter the gods of Egypt and bring the Korban Pesach. Only in that way will God ultimately redeem you. In other words, the Korban Pesach was perceived in Mitzrayim as an act of defiance against the idolatrous pagan culture of Mitzrayim itself. There's a series of laws pertaining to the Korban Pesach which are interpreted by various Mefarshim, all related to the public display of defiance against Egypt. So for example, the blood that was put on the doorposts. It's Machloket Rashi and the Rambam whether the blood was inside the door or outside the door. Rashi says it was on the inside of the door because it was for us, not for Egypt. The Rambam says it was on the outside of the door. Why God needs to see the blood on the outside of the door? Rashi's question is, why does God need to see the blood? So the Rambam says, God didn't need to see the blood. Egypt needed to see the blood. Egypt needed to see that we were saying to Egypt, we are slaughtering your God right now in our homes. We are eating this animal, and you can't stop us. This is the halacha that says that the Korban Pesach couldn't be broken, that it had to be Rosho al-Kra'avi al-Kibo. It had to be roasted whole. Right? So the Sefer HaKedah says it had to be roasted whole so you could see the shape of the animal. It couldn't be cooked in a pot. It had to be roasted on a spit in public, whole, so that the Egyptians could see, so that there couldn't be, they weren't disguising this. They weren't hiding it. Some of the Foshim said that the smell of the barbecue has a unique smell. They can smell it all over town. Right? You cook it, sort of everything's contained in the pot. They wanted all of Egypt to smell the barbecue. Because it had to be not just be a secretive act of defiance, it had to be a public act of defiance. This was a major break. This was 400 years of cultural assimilation, breaking from Egypt and essentially asserting their loyalty to God. This was a brit that they were engaged in as a people. What happens in the Korban Pesach in history is that there are various moments when the Korban Pesach is transformed from a reenactment of the ancient brit of Mitzrayim to an enactment of a renewal of the brit today. You understand the difference? Every year they do the Korban Pesach, it's because they're reenacting the brit of Mitzrayim. But there are certain key moments when, because of the historical context of the slide back into the world of idolatry, where the break from idolatry imbibes the Korban Pesach with a new meaning. So when they enter into Eretz Yisrael for the first time after 40 years, when they were denied the Korban Pesach in the desert, and they engage the Korban Pesach again, suddenly it has new meaning. They're reenacting the brit. When Shmuel takes them out of 400 years of a slide of idolatry, he does so with the Korban Pesach because they are reenacting the brit, not the Korban Pesach. Every year they reenact the Korban Pesach as the old brit. Now they're reenacting the brit. They need a Korban Pesach, a new Korban Pesach. Chizkiyahu, an entire generation engulfed into the idolatry of the generation of Ahaz, brings the people out of that idolatry, brings them back into the Beit HaMikdash, albeit only with Judah, because the northern kingdom is not interested. Brings the Korban Pesach. And he has to do it in the second month. He's not prepared to give up the Korban Pesach because the Korban Pesach was so critical to that reenactment of the brit. Yoshiyahu understands this message very well. For the first time since the days of Shmuel, he's managed to bring all of Israel back away from the abyss of idolatry. It's a reenactment of the brit. And it says, Vayichrot et ha-brit. They find the Sefer Torah. They reenact the entire brit of Parshat Ki Tavo and the Tochacha. Can't do that without a Korban Pesach. And Ezra, after Galut Bavel, brings the Jewish people back to Eretz Yisrael, much as Yoshua, after the exile, brings them into Eretz Yisrael. Can't do so without a Korban Pesach. So whereas there's a Korban Pesach every year it's a reenactment of the Korban Pesach and the Brit of Mitzrayim. Whereas in these 6 points in history in Tanakh, there's a need to reenact not the Korban Pesach, but the brit, of which the Korban Pesach was the symbol of the brit itself.
So in this six instances, does that mean that almost all Bnei Israel was good?
Well, that's the Radak that distinguishes between Yoshiyahu and Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu, there was fewer. Yoshiyahu, there were more. Right? More comprehensive. What we haven't done, which we'll do next week, is the flip side of this discussion, which is, what's the flip side of this discussion? We've addressed Korban Pesach. What haven't we addressed? Brit Mila. So the flip side of all of this is the relationship of Brit Mila to Korban Pesach. And that'll fill in the whole picture. So that is what the Shem will do next week.
You read the article in the New York Times that said that people
every once in a while, there's a story of that nature.
someone used them for the nether before you had, if you saw them.